Last week, I had a fantastic chat with Crystal Cabrera about her experience so far training her dog Koopa to be a therapy dog. And honestly, this chat got me thinking about a bunch of things that all relate to this topic. So I figured I'd take a minute today and share my thoughts from the chat that I had with Crystal. If you happen to have missed the full interview episode, you can give it a listen over at otforlife.com/97. That's episode 97, titled How to Train a Therapy Dog. And if you have trained a therapy dog, or if you're interested in training one, I'd love to hear from you. So shoot me a message on Instagram or send me an email. I'd love to hear what's been going on, your experience, and if you have any questions about this topic. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah Putt. I've been an occupational therapist since 2009, specializing in early intervention and also run my own private practice in this setting. Welcome to OT for Life. Therapy dogs and animals have been an interest of mine for many, many years, and I know a lot of other OT practitioners and students also have an interest in this area too. I have dabbled in incorporating hippotherapy as part of my OT practice, and I've even taken the first level one training course in order to become certified. Now, I'm not certified yet, but I've taken the first course, and there's another course that you have to take as well as some other additional trainings and tests that you have to do in order to become certified. While I feel like there's a lot of amazingness about incorporating animals into therapy, there's also a lot of information that I think is really important to share for anybody that might be considering training or incorporating a dog or any other animal into therapy. As discussed in the episode, when we are specifically talking about dogs and canine partners, there are a couple of different types of services or therapy that dogs can be incorporated in. And Crystal did a fantastic job highlighting the differences between these two areas, but I also wanted to dig into this a little bit more just to make sure that we're all on the same page. Really, not all service animals and not all therapy animals are the same. And that is a big take-home point for me. I think it's really easy for people to just think all dogs are therapy dogs, or all dogs are service dogs, or all animals are service animals. And that is just not the case. There are some very specific delineations between a service animal, a therapy dog, and other types of activities that you can do with dogs or animals to serve a purpose. So let me go through and explain the differences between service dogs, therapy dogs, and emotional support animals. Now, I am not an expert in this, but I did some research digging into the American Kennel Club. So I'll be sure to link to where I got this information in the show notes if you want to read up a little bit more about what I'm talking about right now. So first off, service dogs. Let's talk about service dogs. As defined by the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, service dogs are individually trained to perform specific tasks and to work with people with disabilities. Now, this could be a physical disability, sensory, psychiatric, intellectual, or other mental disability. Now, these are in quotes. These are not my words. This is coming directly from the American Kennel Club and the ADA. Some of the things that a service dog could do would be being a guide dog to help blind people navigate in the world. It could help people that are deaf or hard of hearing and signal them to sounds such as a knock on the door. The dog could be trained to detect psychiatric episodes in clients. And it could also help people that have some sort of physical limitation. And that could be opening doors or fetching things that they can't reach and carrying things for their handler. And another way service dogs can be used is being an autism assistance dog. And they are trained to help those on the autism spectrum to distinguish important sensory signals from other sensory input. So this could be a smoke alarm or something like that. It could also alert them if they are becoming overstimulated or engaging in repetitive behaviors. The big thing about service dogs is that the ADA mandates that service dogs have full public access rights, which means that they're allowed to go places where other animals are forbidden. So that is service dogs. As far as therapy dogs also receive training. Service dogs receive a specific set of training. Therapy dogs receive their own set of training, but they have a completely different type of job from service dogs. The responsibilities of a therapy dog are to provide psychological or physiological therapy to individuals other than their handlers. So service dogs are trained to support their specific handler, whereas therapy dogs are trained to work with various individuals throughout the day. They can visit hospitals, schools, hospice centers, nursing homes. And unlike service dogs, therapy dogs are encouraged to interact with a variety of people while they're on duty. So that is service dogs, then therapy dogs. And now let's talk about emotional support animals or emotional support dogs. Emotional support dogs are not considered service dogs under the ADA. They may be trained for a specific owner, but they're not trained for specific tasks or duties to aid a person with a disability. And this is really kind of that main difference between emotional support animals and service dogs. Emotional support animals are considered companion animals. They may ease anxiety, depression, some phobias, or loneliness, for a couple of examples. And in order for it to be considered an emotional support dog, it must be prescribed by a mental health professional for a patient with a diagnosed psychological or emotional disorder. And this could be, for example, anxiety disorder, major depression, or panic attacks. And unlike service dogs, emotional support dogs or emotional support animals have only limited legal rights, and those typically require a letter of diagnosis from the owner's doctor or psychiatrist. So those are the big main differences with those three different types of dogs: service dogs, therapy dogs, and emotional support dogs. Now, like I mentioned in the beginning of the episode, I have also done some work utilizing hypnotherapy as a part of my OT practice. And just like there are differences between the types of service and therapy dogs, there's also differences within the therapeutic riding and hypnotherapy world that, just like the conversation with the dogs, I feel like a lot of people get easily confused about what the difference is between them. So just because I'm passionate about hypnotherapy, I'm going to take a minute just to dive into the different levels of hypnotherapy too. While we're talking about animal-assisted therapy, service animals, therapy animals, and all that stuff. So first off, hypnotherapy is conducted by a certified physical therapist, occupational therapist, or speech-language pathologist, and they utilize the movement of the horse, the equine movement, as a modality within their treatment strategy. So for hypnotherapy, the gait, the movement, the cadence of the step, this is all an extremely important part of the therapy process. And in order for it to be considered hypnotherapy, it has to be done by a certified physical therapist, occupational therapist, or speech language pathologist. If it is not done by one of those therapists or practitioners, it is not considered hypnotherapy. Another type of service that you might hear about within the equine world is therapeutic riding. Now, basically, therapeutic riding is recreational horseback riding lessons that are adapted to individuals with disabilities. So these can be done by a horseback riding trainer or somebody that's familiar with teaching horseback riding lessons, and really just adapt it for that individual person to help them learn how to ride a horse. And then there's also one more area that you might hear as well, and that's called equine-assisted activities. Now, equine-assisted activities are any sort of mounted or ground activities that have to do with horses. So not necessarily therapy-related, but this could be teaching somebody how to care for a horse, how to tack up their own horse for a horseback riding lesson, untacking, brushing the horse, caring for the horse, anything like that. So you might be wondering why I just took a handful of minutes to lay out the differences between therapy, service, and emotional support dogs, as well as some of the differences within the equine world. And honestly, first and foremost, I think utilizing the correct terminology is so, so important. All too often, I hear people refer to hypnotherapy when they're actually talking about therapeutic riding, or they refer to a therapy dog as a service dog. And if we ourselves are not utilizing the correct language and the correct terminology in how we're talking about each individual type of support or service animal, then it's no wonder that the rest of society is going to be confused when they start hearing hypnotherapy and they think that that automatically assumes that it's therapeutic horseback riding or any of the other types that I've listed out before. So utilizing that correct terminology and really having a firm understanding is important for us as practitioners to understand this so we can educate our clients and their families about what support or therapy animal might be the best. But it also goes further than that and creates a ripple effect if we can explain it the best to our clients, to our friends, and to our family when they go out into the world and they have conversations about it. They can continue that education piece and make sure that people are really understanding the differences in what these are. I also think it's important to understand the difference if you're thinking about training a therapy dog or if you're thinking about getting into some sort of equine-assisted activities or hippotherapy or something like that. First, you need to understand what the differences are out there, and then you can figure out what type of service or support that you want to start training towards. Going back to the hippotherapy part just for a second, I think one of the things I hear a lot is people assume that incorporating an older horse is perfect because they might be lazy, they might be more tired, they might be more calm than incorporating a younger horse, but they also don't consider that older horses might have some muscle and joint implications, and it might impede their movement a little bit. And if you're specifically looking at incorporating hippotherapy, going back to how I explained it, utilizing the movement of the horse, the gait of the horse, the cadence of their step, that is the most important thing. Whereas you don't want to have a horse that might have a hitchy step or they might be a little bit lame because they're older. That hitch in their step is actually going to come across in the therapy session and could have an influence on how the child or adult, whoever is utilizing the hippotherapy session, it could have an effect in how their movement is impacted. So again, I think it's just really, really important to understand what it is that you're trying to get out of this and understanding the differences between them. So you can really kind of go back to your why in what it is that you're trying to accomplish here. The other big thing about understanding and utilizing the correct terminology is that there's different rules and regulations for each one. So service dogs have a specific set of training that they have to go through. Therapy dogs have their own specific regimen of training that they have to go through. Horses that are utilized in hippotherapy or in therapeutic riding classes, they're all trained slightly different and they all have a different purpose that they serve. So it's also important to understand the rules and regulations that apply to each one. Also, as discussed in the main interview episode with Crystal, every dog or horse or animal is different. They have a different temperament. They have different interests. They have different things that make them unique. And this can be both good and bad depending on the type of therapy session that you want to do or the client that you're working with. When we're considering the therapy environment, the environment piece is a huge part of our role as an occupational therapy practitioner. If we're incorporating an animal, a dog or a horse or whatever it is, into our therapy session, they become part of that environment. So it's important to consider the size of the animal, the color of the animal, their temperament, maybe the feeling of their fur, the sound of their bark. There's so many other things that is unique to each animal and each dog that you potentially could be bringing in to a therapy session, and that is part of the environment. And while some might be great for some clients, others might be the worst temperament or size-wise or anything like that. It might actually impede your session more because of something about the dog. So I think it's important to consider what dog it is that you are using for your therapy sessions, what they bring to the table, and what they contribute. And I loved how Crystal talked about how one of the dogs that she's familiar with is much more of kind of a couch potato and just kind of sits there and doesn't do a whole lot, which would be great for some clients, but it might not work for all. And then how she was saying her dog tends to have a little bit more energy and, you know, a little bit more spunk. And so that could be great for some clients, but also not so great for other clients. So really paying attention that not every dog is going to be perfect for every person. You really have to think about the type of dog that you're bringing in, who they are, and what they contribute to that session. And also, we did talk about this in the episode as well, being able to understand what dog is appropriate and when. You might even be able to utilize different dogs at different times. So if you have somebody who is not super familiar with having dogs around them or having animals around them, but they're open to allowing a dog to start coming into the therapy session, you might want to start with a dog that's a little quieter, a little less energy to allow the client to become comfortable. And then once they get comfortable later on, maybe a couple weeks or a couple months, then you might be able to grade it up to a dog that has a little bit more energy, and you're able to do a little bit more with there. So it's understanding the therapy progression and understanding what dog would be most appropriate throughout that time period. As I mentioned in the very beginning of the episode, I am super fascinated by incorporating animals into therapy. I think that there is a lot of research out there about the positive effects of incorporating animals into therapy, both for the clients and for the animals. And we did touch on this in my discussion with Crystal. And I have seen firsthand in some of the work that I have done, as well as I've read about it in the literature, about the connections that animals and our clients can establish between themselves. And I've heard time and time again stories about how people are nonverbal and they've never said a word in their life. And then they start doing some sort of hippotherapy, or one of their therapists starts incorporating therapy dogs into their sessions. And all of a sudden, they say their very first word to the dog or to the horse. And this has happened so many times, and I constantly hear it happening. And I think it's just fascinating to see that, to see the connections that can be built, and to see how it really can have an impact on the client's life. Another thing that I've heard about a lot is helping our clients understand and start to be able to read the nonverbal cues of the animals to help them become more aware of their own nonverbal cues as well as other people's. So having a client be around a therapy dog and then start explaining to them, you know, if they're petting them too hard and the dog kind of pins its ears back, starting to help them understand, oh, maybe we need to not pet them as hard. See how their ears are pinned back. See how they are reacting a little bit. Let's adjust our own cues to see if we can help the dog feel a little bit more comfortable. And it's amazing how so much can be communicated non-verbally just through our actions, through our behaviors, and through the behaviors of others. And it's really, really cool to have watched this in some of the work that I've done, but also some documentaries and some other videos that I've seen. Watching this happen firsthand is really, really cool. I also wanted to mention, I am a huge fan of Temple Grandin, and I've read a ton of her books so far. And a few that actually come to mind that play into this topic a lot would be Thinking in Pictures, Animals in Translation, and The Autistic Brain. I have loved all of her books that I've read so far. Haven't read them all, but I've read a bunch of them. And really, this kind of human-animal connection, the power of this connection, is highlighted in so many of her books and so much of the work that she has done. I have also had the opportunity to listen to her speak in person, and it was a life-changing event. I went a couple years ago. She happened to be presenting right down the street from me, and I was like, I have to go. And I went, and it was unreal. It was amazing. I was surrounded by other practitioners, whether it was speech, occupational, physical, there were teachers there, there were parents there, and the way that she conveyed her message was so powerful. So that being said, if you ever get a chance to attend one of her presentations or one of her talks, and you are also interested in autism or the connection of humans and animals, just do it. You will not be disappointed. She is such an amazing speaker. So there you have it. Those were my three takeaways from my episode with Crystal. And like what was discussed in the actual interview episode, there's a lot of parallels between working with therapy animals, incorporating them in our therapy sessions, and the work that we do as occupational therapy practitioners. So just to reiterate, my three takeaways from my chat with Crystal is that not all service and therapy animals are the same. And it's really important that we understand the differences so we can educate people about these differences and make sure that everybody understands the purpose and the why behind each type of service or therapy animal. Number two, recognizing how and when or when not to utilize animals in therapy. And number three, the power of incorporating animals into therapy. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you have any takeaways that you would like to share, you can shoot me an email or a DM on Instagram. At this moment, we've got one more week to get your voicemails in to answer the question of the month. Currently, the question of the month is all about our 2020 reflections, what we learned, what went well, and what went not so well. I will need your response by Friday, January 29th, so I can include it in next week's podcast episode. If you happen to be listening to this episode after that date, head on over to otforlife.com/question of the month to see what the newest question is for this month. This is also where you can leave me a voicemail with your response for the current question. There's a link right there, and it will take you right to where you can hit record. You get 90 seconds to share your response with me. Just be sure that you state your name, where you're coming from, if it's a blog or a podcast or a school or anything like that, and then state your response. If you have a lot more to say than just 90 seconds, feel free to call back in and leave additional voicemails. All voicemails that I receive will be featured in an upcoming podcast episode. Now, next week's episode is going to be a super fun one to share. I have already received some great reflections from the OT community, and will also be sharing my own reflections from the year that was 2020. And P.S., I've got something huge, absolutely huge to share with you. I haven't talked about it. I have not mentioned it. I have not shared it anywhere yet. So if you want to be the first person to find out this huge news, you're going to have to tune in to next week's episode. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you like what you hear, here are three easy ways you can help support the show. One, head over to otforlife.com to find out more about any resources discussed on the show. Remember, that's OT4LYFE.com. Two, share the podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Three, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. And while you're there, be sure to leave a review saying how much you love the show. Thanks again. I'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.